You know, I was lucky enough to be the first person in the world to try to study at a psychological and cognitive level how the video games that we play change how we respond to stress and challenge in everyday life. I got my PhD in that research area, and I have been studying games and making games to try to have a positive impact on people's real lives ever since.
And games are so easy to attack, and you hear it all the time by politicians and people in the media, but you say games make us the best version of ourselves. Tell us what you mean by that.
They can make us the best version of ourselves. There are some pitfalls, and we can talk about that you want to avoid. But the main thing that video games do, especially for young people, is they help us develop a challenge mindset, which means that we are confident in our ability to learn new skills, to develop new strategies, to get better at things that we are not good at the first time we try them. And this makes really intuitive sense. If you think about any game, it's designed for you to be bad at it the first time you try it, whether it's golf or chess or Fortnite. And playing a game is really about the pleasure of getting better, of mastering new skills and exploring different strategies. And it builds both the confidence in your own ability to get better through your own effort and attention, but it also builds the neurological pathways that allow your brain to respond to challenge and stress in a more positive way so that you're not dealing with anxiety. You are actually feeling energized by the opportunity to do something that's hard and to do something that allows you to get better.
And you say that most games will not give you a challenge that you are not skilled to master, right?
Well, that's just about right. Actually, what games do is they try to give you a challenge that is just fractionally beyond your current level, whether it's the first time you play a game, you are going to have a moment where you're confused or frustrated as you try to figure out that very first step, or as you get better and you level up or you're playing against more difficult opponents, you're always being stretched to grow just a little bit. And it's why, you know, grown-ups don't play tic-tac-toe unless they're forced to by five-year-olds, because once you stop learning and growing in a game, it gets boring and we don't play it anymore. Once you've sort of figured out every possible optimal move and there's nothing left to learn, you move on to a new game. And so video games are great in that either the levels can get more challenging, new content can get more difficult, or you just can find new players that are better than you and force you to continue to adapt and grow.
When you set out to develop a new game, how do you approach it? Story or skill?
That's really interesting. So the games that I create are usually designed to solve a specific problem for a player. So the game that I'm most famous for, Super Better, I actually developed it to help me heal from a traumatic brain injury. I had a severe concussion that was not healing properly, and I was extremely depressed and anxious and had all the symptoms of vertigo and memory loss and nausea and migraines. And so I created a game around the goal of how can I get my brain to fire up all of those optimistic pathways, that motivated pathways that I used to have in normal life before the injury, so that I can kind of get back out of bed and reengage with daily life, even though it may be harder than it used to be. Can I bring that gameful mindset where I'm not just feeling anxious or depressed by the challenge, but actually feel like I can rise to the occasion? And so that game, you know, it started with essentially a neurological skill. What will force my brain to fire up those pathways, which tend to shut down when you have a traumatic brain injury or concussion, because your brain wants you to lie in bed and not hit itself again so that you stay healthy and recover. So for me, when I design a game, I'm really thinking about what's the end result I want to have on the psychological health of the player or the cognitive skills of the player, and then using the research literature and also just my own intuition as a game designer to make sure that whatever we're doing is fun and interesting.
How important is the storyline then?
You know, the real story of any game is the story of the player's journey. So, you know, you take a game like Fortnite and the stories that players tell about it, it's not about the mythology of the universe. It's about what that player decided to do, the action that they took, the strategy they created, the collaboration that they entered into with their team members. So I think with games, the most important stories are the stories you can tell about yourself, stories about, you know, it was unbelievable pressure that I was under and I came up with this crazy idea and I tried it and it worked, or, you know, I was there for my team members, we were just about out of the match and I came in with this crazy move at the last minute, I was totally able to help and save the day. That story that we tell is really about ourselves, and it allows us to really reflect on our own positive strengths. And so I always encourage, you know, people when they think about gaming narrative, the story within the game is never going to be as important as the story that the player gets to tell about their own determination and creativity and teamwork.
You spoke about your game Super Better. There's now a book, Super Better, you just came out with, right?
Yeah, there is a book version, it goes into all of the science behind how games can strengthen our real-life skills and abilities, whether it's in the sort of mental and cognitive area or social area or emotional area. And that was really a lot of fun to write because it gave me a chance to really dig deep and explain, you know, how could a game help people with such serious challenges like anxiety, depression, or traumatic brain injury? And it was really a great opportunity to say, wow, there are literally 500 peer-reviewed scientific papers that can help us understand exactly what's happening in our brains and in our relationships when we play games together.
What are alternative reality games?
So there's a genre of game that is really intentionally designed to bring games off of our screens and out into real spaces. Some of the games that I worked on years ago when I was first designing games, they were the first games to be using GPS so that we would know where in the world you were, so that we could give you something to do in the real world based on whether you were near a payphone that you could answer and solve a puzzle, or you could go to a park and meet up with other players and do a creative challenge. And if you think about Pokemon Go, that's really the best example of where that genre of games has evolved, where now you can go out into the real world and move around in real spaces and have this wonderful face-to-face social interaction with your real-life friends and family and with other people in your community. But we're really trying to make sure that games are firmly embedded in our everyday lives and everyday spaces so that it's not just about escaping, but it's really about engaging with the real world in more fun and positive ways.
When you see something like Pokemon Go, do you sit back and say, geez, I wish I'd thought of that?
Oh, you know, it's amazing. When Pokemon Go, the phenomenon, first happened, I was just celebrating because my first book, Reality is Broken, which I published, I think, 5 years before Pokemon Go came out, I was talking about what the future of games could be, you know, what we could all experience if we brought games out into the real world and more embedded in our real relationships and real lives. And so to have made that kind of a future forecast and to see it play out was really fulfilling for me personally. And I still play it every day with my daughters. I have twin daughters. And so we are living the future, and I'm really happy about that.
Just a quick aside, aren't you a twin also?
I am a twin, and actually that's sort of my secret superpower, because while I was doing my PhD studying video games, she was doing her PhD studying psychology at Stanford right across the bay while I was at Berkeley. And so I think that was really able to help kind of get me into the pipeline of the cutting edge research and kind of combine our wisdom to really understand what is going on in games.
So one of your goals, and do you see this happening, are we solving real-world problems with games?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest goal right now is I'm developing a series of future forecasting games that allow people to better anticipate the long-term consequences of new technologies. So, you know, what if Facebook had been able to foresee fake news 10 years ago? What if Twitter had been able to foresee the kinds of social media bullying that has become common? What if Apple had been able to foresee the kind of smartphone addiction that so many people feel, and that we're feeling like the technology is hurting our mental health instead of improving it. So I'm working with the Institute for the Future to develop these future forecasting games so that we have a chance to think about things like self-driving cars and augmented reality and virtual reality and automation of jobs, and really kind of get ahead of where these technologies might take us so that we can predict what might go wrong and brainstorm solutions and strategies before we wake up in a future that we don't want to actually be living in.
So look ahead. I mean, things have progressed so quickly over the years. What do you see in the future of gaming like 10, 20 years from now?
I definitely see, especially in virtual reality, there will be a lot of really important strategic applications of virtual reality and gaming in VR. Specifically, there's been so much research and clinical application of how it can be used to treat pain. So you can reduce the number of prescriptions for addictive pain medications, lower the side effects. We're seeing virtual reality is having really amazing use in hospice situations. So for people who are at the end of life and they still have these places they wish they had been able to go or experiences they wish they'd been able to have in their real life, using VR to kind of bring those experiences into our minds as if we really had lived them. So I think there's a lot of really exciting strategic application for how we can reduce suffering and use these technologies to improve our quality of life in really meaningful ways that are not just about escaping the real world, but actually bringing benefit to the people who use the technologies.
Well, you're coming to town, to Pensacola, for the Makers Fair in November. What are we going to be hearing from you there?
Well, we're definitely going to be playing a game for sure. I haven't decided which game we're going to play yet. But one of my favorite things to do is to try to teach the audience a game they've never played before so they can really have that firsthand experience of the brain being forced to stretch and grow and build new neurological pathways so that you go into that challenge mindset. So I'll be sharing some of the research, showing some imagery of what's happening in the brain, the blood flow, and the regional activations, and we will definitely play a game that hopefully no one in the room has ever played before so that everyone has that chance to experience that gameful challenge mindset.
When you meet people like that in these events, what do they ask you? What do they want from you?
Parents want to know what they can do to maximize the benefits and avoid, possible negative outcomes from gaming. And, I always say that the most important thing that you can do is to have conversations that emphasize the real strengths and skills that are being developed. So to ask your kid of any age, whether they're a grown kid, they're in their 20s and they're still gaming, or they're young kids like mine, to ask them questions like, what have you gotten better at since you started playing this game? What skills does it take to be good at this game? What's the hardest thing that you've accomplished in this game? So that they have a chance to really validate that there are real skills and real character strengths and cognitive strengths that they're using. Because what the research shows is that when a gamer can talk about these real skills and real strengths, they're more likely to bring them to everyday challenges, whether it's in school or at work or in their personal goal setting. So that's, I hear, what can I do to maximize the benefits? And that kind of conversation is really what can bring benefit to the most gamers.
Okay, well, I have one more question, and it's a cliche question, but I've got to ask it. Being a woman in the gaming world is kind of rare still, isn't it?
Not as much as it used to be. We have about half of the world's gamers are women and girls. And there are, more moms who have kids at home that are playing video games than there are boys under 18, just from a pure statistic. I do think that the media tends to cover some of the boy gaming, the male gaming, more than for women. But just from a purely factual, objective basis, it's 50-50. And that's really cool and exciting because it means that whoever you are, there is a game for you and people to play with.
Is it approaching 50-50 on your side of the console?
You mean in terms of development?
Yeah.
People who are developing games?
Yes.
No, it's not development like most technology. Development of games still skews male from the design and engineering and programming perspective. But that's something that hopefully we'll see continue to evolve, not just in gaming, but in all technology fields.
Well, maybe you'll inspire a few people when you come to town this next month.
That would be amazing. I will make that one of my personal goals. Thank you for suggesting it.
Okay.